afternoon. Thank you for tuning in to Faith and Reason here on Holy Family Radio. This is your host, Dr. John Pinheiro. Now, as many of you know, of course, I'm a historian. I teach American history at Aquinas College and direct the Catholic Studies program there. And so quite often, I can't help myself, we have historians on the program. But I think knowing our past is, of course, it's not only a clue to the present, but helps us a lot with the future. I mean, we don't want to engage in some kind of myopic presentism, but nor do we want to have unwarranted nostalgia for the past. But of course, we are the results of all the generations that have gone before, their trial and error, their hard work, what they've built up for us. And today we have a guest from the Diocese of Kalamazoo. Holy Family Radio is on in Kalamazoo. It's on in Grand Rapids. And you can pick up the broadcast in other places in West Michigan and Southwest Michigan. And we stream live on the World Wide Web. So for Faith and Reason, we want to make sure that we're bringing in folks from the Diocese of Kalamazoo. We've already interviewed Father Rob Johansson about the liturgy, and he sang for us. I hope you all had enjoyed that. Today we have Father Bob Cregan, the pastor of St. Catherine of Siena Parish in Portage, named after a great Dominican, as we would be sure to point out at Aquinas College. Father Bob is a historian for the Diocese of Kalamazoo. Formerly, he had filled the post of archivist, and I'm glad that, as with the Diocese of Grand Rapids, Kalamazoo has a staff historian. And I'd like to welcome you to the show, Father Bob.
Thank you very much, John. It's great to be with you.
Thank you. I guess I'd like to start out. I remember as a kid, I wanted to be an astronomer till I discovered I couldn't really do math very well. So my vocation shifted quickly because I was very interested in history. And so I knew I wanted to be a historian, but I never knew what that entailed. There's all kinds of ways to be an historian, as we often tell our students. And so why don't we start the show today? You could tell us a bit about what you do as a historian for something as big as a diocese, like the Kalamazoo Diocese.
Yes, John. Well, you know, when I was named the archivist for the diocese, it was to try to follow up with things that are stored at our diocesan pastoral center as far as of historical nature, and then and to be honest, while not a whole lot has happened because of my primary duties as a pastor, nevertheless, when things come across the desks. Or someone feels that there should be something filed, so we make sure it is filed in our archives. But in addition to that, then you know, one of our former bishops named me the historian for the diocese because I guess I had enough stories about different things that have gone in the diocese. We really have quite a rich history, even though the Diocese of Kalamazoo was only founded in 1971. That we certainly our parishes, all of our parishes have been well established long before that, some you know over 100 years before that, but also because of the French explorers and the interest of the Great Lakes, that we have a history that dates back well into the 17th century.
So when you look through the archives of the diocese there, that means you must have all kinds of – do you have all kinds of documents dating back further than 1971 then?
Yes, right. And primarily it would be when diocese would be established, you know, the parish information would be sent by the older diocese to the newer diocese. And so some of our parishes, you know, date back to the early part of the 19th century. Our oldest parish would be Sacred Heart of Mary's parish in Silver Creek, just north of Dowagiac, and they just had their 175th anniversary. I almost forgot one. St. Joseph's in White Pigeon was established back in 1832. So so here are two mission parishes. They don't have a resident pastor, but here are two mission parishes that have a long, rich history and a very important part of the Catholic faith settling and being established here in Southwest Michigan.
As an historian, I know, you know, in Grand Rapids here, we have the diocesan historian, Father Morrow. But then we also have Marywood, where the Dominican sisters live, the Grand Rapids Dominicans, and they have extensive archives there. And we have archives at Aquinas College, too. And I wonder how much crossover there is among those archives. If I'm guessing that the Kalamazoo Diocese must have had a number of different religious orders help establish some of those early parishes. And I know we'll get to that. We'll talk about the missionaries and things. But do their records go with them? Do you get copies of them? I guess I'm thinking it's kind of a nuts and bolts kind of question here.
Right. Most of those things, if it were related to their parishes. Really, the only foundation of a religious community here in the diocese would have been these, originally, the Sisters of St. Joseph, now known as the Congregation of St. Joseph at Nazareth, Michigan, which is adjacent to Kalamazoo. And the sisters, they were invited to this area to establish the first hospital, which is still in existence, Borges Catholic, the Borges Medical Center, named after Bishop Borges of Detroit, and so they came and established the hospital and a nursing program, as well as they had Nazareth College for many years. And unfortunately, it closed in 1992. It was, and yet in that history with the college, they also provided a lot of. A lot of sisters who taught in our Catholic schools here in Southwest Michigan, but also throughout Michigan and different parts of the United States. Now, they have a tremendous history room, and recently when we visited the different deaneries and we stopped at Nazareth, it's just a beautiful story about how the sisters, their foundations going back to France, and how they came to the United States through New York, and then eventually established here at Nazareth, and then and how they continue to grow in the missionary work that of the sisters still participate in, that still includes the hospital and schools, but also parish work and other missionary activities here in the diocese and elsewhere.
Well, thank you for that. I know we have so many of my students at Aquinas want to go into public history, and they're never quite sure where to start. And so we have a pretty good relationship with the Ford Museum and Jim Kratzis, who helps direct the Ford Museum, guides our students in some of those choices. But it's always good to know, and people should know. I mean, every institution, every place, every station, every parish, everybody has a history.
Yeah.
And the only way we can maintain it, really, is for people like you. And the archives are such a valuable thing. And in my experience, the worst people at saving things are usually historians. I mean, I clean out my filing cabinet once a semester. Mm-hmm. I try to. I probably just fibbed. But maybe once a year if I'm lucky. But I try to do it once a semester. And I throw out all kinds of things that I later wish I had kept. But we can't keep everything, but I know archives are pretty good at that. My last question on this angle is just this. We have a priest who's our historian in Grand Rapids Diocese, and you're also a priest, and you're their historian. Is that a requirement in some way for a diocese? That is it a clergy, that the historian must be a clergyman?
No, I don't think it's a... in my case, I think it was more by default than
institutional memory, that kind of thing.
It's just been something that I've always taken an interest in, and in fact, when Bishop Bradley arrived about 5 years ago, different times that I was at different gatherings of different parishes, and I would bend his ears for a few minutes just to give a little background about that particular parish or the area there, and. And so not just to impress the bishop, but to impress upon him that there is a beautiful, rich history of the faith, and which he is the shepherd of now.
Well, let's get into some of that history then. I'm profoundly humbled as a Catholic when I read and study about the sacrifices that have taken place, not only to build our church buildings that are still with us today, like some of the parishes that were built by really urban poor immigrants, and they put so much into building these wonderful buildings, but also just spreading the faith. And I think let's start with the first Catholics in the region, some of those early missionaries. What if you could tell us what they had to go through, and where did they come from? What did they leave behind? Just some of that very early history and what later became Michigan.
Yes, well, you know, during the 17th century, of course, as the explorers were making their way through the Great Lakes, this is where you have the explorers like La Salle or Joliet. You know, they had priests with them, and so you know, La Salle brought Father Marquette, who was part of the initial expeditions that surveyed the Great Lakes and even made his way down the Mississippi, you know, or Joliet, the priest that traveled with him was Father Claude Allouez. And I'm especially interested in Father Allouez, nothing against Father Marquette, because again, there's an entire diocese named after Father Marquette in the Upper Peninsula. And Father Marquette is buried in St. Ignace. He died here in Ludington, along the shores of Lake Michigan. But it was Father Allouez, who they were contemporaries, though they arrived here again with the different explorers. With Father Allouez, he was more significant in going into Wisconsin, but had started here in northern Michigan, but he is one of these early missionaries who in his travels, when he died in Niles, Michigan, and he's buried there. He died in Ash. What is it? He died in 1689. But here is this Jesuit missionary who was sharing the faith, and when he did die, you know that his marker, his grave is in our diocese here in Niles, Michigan, and it's one that's probably, it's right along the St. Joseph River, but for most people is basically ignored and forgotten about. But here are two great missionaries that were here in Southwest Michigan, and of course their initial efforts were for the Native Americans, particularly the Potawatomis here in Southwest Michigan.
Now, were they Jesuits?
Now, Father Allouez was a Jesuit, Father Marquette. I'm just double checking some things. I think Father Marquette.
I picture French missionaries, and I assume they might be. And when I think you mentioned 1689 as the year, and I'm thinking of some of the history classes I teach, or what's going on in 1689. Well, my goodness, the William and Mary are coming into England to make sure it's going to be Catholic, and they're getting ready to conquer the Irish at the Battle of the Boyne, which is still celebrated with parades in Northern Ireland, mm-hmm. with the Orange Order parades. And so in Europe, in some ways, the faith is on the run. And then we switch over to North America at exactly the same time, and here these French missionaries are working their way into the wilderness that's now Michigan, and they're spreading the faith. It's just an amazing story how the faith is, you know, it's squeezed somewhere else and it pops up elsewhere.
Yes.
It's just constantly growing and evangelizing in new and different ways.
So, you know, when we have these, well, and again, going back to your initial question, Father Marquette was also a Jesuit missionary. And so, you know, really the establishment of Michigan, again, a lot of people think of the longest establishment of a church, or the church is down in Florida with St. Augustine, Florida. And yet the second is here in northern Michigan with St. Ignace, and Mackinac Island is very much a part of it. And here is this gateway, where the two Great Lakes meet, Michigan and Huron, up in northern Michigan. And again, this was the passageway down into the interior of what is now the United States. But the Great Lakes, and particularly the state of Michigan, the Lower Peninsula, it has you know, the interest there is something that once the explorers came in, then the interest would come somewhat later, because there is some of the obstacles would be how to get there. Well, they had the waterway, obviously, with the Great Lakes, but as far as traveling here, you know, Michigan was not when the explorers or had passed. Then when it was time for settlers, it was not the most attractive area to come. Not just because we have snow now, but it's, you know, during here in this particular winter, but it was being a peninsula. There was just a lot of lakes, a lot of rivers, a lot of swamps. And so, you know, and to go into these areas, and it's like there wasn't a high interest in settling in swamp area that that is our Great Lakes state, you know. And so...
But the location among all these lakes, I would think it would be very strategic to, yep, to settle here in some capacity.
Yep. And eventually it would be. It would be seen because, again, for the Native Americans, they had found, you know, they put the lakes, that was a supply of, and there was also even the beginning of agriculture, that they would live off the land. Once the when the settlers were coming, then after the wave of, it would be really the beginning of the 19th century that there would be this this new interest in the and, you know, of course, the beginning of our own nation would be, you know, then things started moving west. That, and so they started going west, and they went to Ohio, got to Indiana. They turned north for a while, and they thought, no, then they went back west and went into Illinois and made their way around. And so Michigan comes a little bit long later with a lot more settlers.
Isn't that interesting? Yeah.
But and so with, you know, many of the white settlers, you know, you know, though Detroit has its, you know, dates back to, you know, the establishment of that city to 1701. But, you know, but here on the southwestern part, while we did have Fort St. Joseph, we had Niles, was an establishment, but, you know, things in the, there weren't many places in the interior until the 1820s, the 1830s. And that, and part of that had to do with the building of the Erie Canal, and then the initial interest in how do we have transportation, and the considering the railroad, and the railroad was had its was the beginning and the help of bringing people into this you know, from the Detroit area and moving west and eventually into the Chicago area. And so here's this corridor that now we're so used to, you know, the interstate highway system back of the 1950s and 60s that connected everybody, you know, throughout the United States through these interstates. But prior to that, it's like it was a long, slow trip, either by, you know, these secondary roads or the railroad itself.
Well, what happened to the French influence, the French settlements here? We'll move into the United States period here in just a second, but I'm curious now. So the French missionaries were the first here, as they were in general in this part of the country. And, you know, sometimes the French would have better relations with the Indians than the English, because a single Jesuit is much less threatening than a family of 20 Puritans, mm-hmm, in terms of, you know, eating the locals out of house and home and populating and that kind of thing. So sometimes that was a little bit safer to the Indians, but sometimes they would have tough times with the Indians too. But I wonder, what, by the time Michigan became a state in the 1830s, what's the status of the French settlements here? Were there French settlements, still French priests? Were the Jesuits long gone?
Right. Well, you know what, with Father Marquette and Father Alloway, of course, their deaths in the latter part of the 17th century. So then you get into the 18th century, and the settlements here in Southwest Michigan, particularly, were either outposts or were military outposts, so there wasn't much interest. It would not be until the 19th century that, again, when settlers start coming in here, while the Native Americans are still have the primary population, of course, the the Jesuit influence had waned long before that because of the their suppression. And it's in the middle of the 18th century there, they were suppressed. Of course, I'm sure the Jesuits in the far outreached areas, they didn't hear the news for years. It would be sometimes up to 20 years. And again, so these if things were trying to be established, and again we had the connection. Father Allouez was connected with the Bishop of Quebec and the first Bishop of Quebec, and having him sent him in along with Joliet for these explorations, and so the but with the suppression of the Jesuits, in the 1760s, the Jesuit influence had left the area by 1780, 1781. And so there would be this period of about 50, 60 years that there's no little to no activity that I'm aware of a Catholic presence, except with those Native Americans who had been influenced and worked with these Jesuit missionaries. So we have to jump into the 1820s, the 1830s, and so now things are being established, and so settlers are coming in. And it's like so, and nevertheless and also, of course, the Native Americans are there, particularly the Potawatomis here in Southwest Michigan. So it's like, what are they doing? Well, there was an effort from our U.S. government, is that there was a request for having a religious presence, and particularly and asking for the black robes, asking for the Catholic presence. And what did they send? They sent a Baptist minister. And and while there was a respect and for the minister that came, the Native Americans in particular were a little reticent about that. And so there's a tremendous story. It's of Chief Pokagan, who was the head of the Potawatomis here in Southwest Michigan, that not once but twice he would walk to Detroit and to make an appeal in person to Father Richard, Gabriel Richard. And Father Richard, who was the Vicar General for the Cincinnati Diocese, because Detroit was not a diocese yet, but nevertheless he had and Father Richard, was a non-voting member of the U.S. Congress as a Catholic priest. He was a Sulpician. He was the co-founder of the University of Michigan, so he was the right man to see. And Chief Pokagan appeals to have a Catholic priest, a black robe, to come here to Southwest Michigan. And by the second visit, his request was granted. And so the priest that they send is Father Theodore Batten. Now, Father Theodore Batten was ordained in 1793. So when he comes here, he's already been a priest for 30-some years. So he comes to Southwest Michigan at the request and was ministering to our Native Americans and any other Catholics who were there. What's unique about Father Batten is that he's the first priest ordained in the United States. And so he had served in Kentucky. He was ordained in Baltimore, and eventually when the Diocese of Cincinnati was established, so he was attached to that diocese. He was incarnated with Cincinnati, but Cincinnati encompassed the Michigan Territory. And so Father Batten was sent here for about a year and a half, 2 years, and eventually he bought some property just south of Niles, and which we call Notre Dame. So he is buried there on the campus of Notre Dame. It's a very favorite spot. He was a priest for 60 years. He died in 1853. So he eventually would be buried there. But he had spent a couple of years here in Southwest Michigan. Well, the priest that followed him died as a young man, and so it left a void there of a Catholic presence, but not before you know, that things have been reestablished. But there, here's the sad story about the that you know, when these treaties that transferred, that took, you know, the original Native American properties and ceded them to the different territories and eventually the state of Michigan, that most of the Native Americans were displaced and moved west, and any of them died along the, what they call that Vale of Tears, except for Chief Pokagon. Now, he's one that he had negotiated well enough that he and his immediate family did stay on here in southwest Michigan. And and as I said, in 1838, that the establishment of Sacred Heart of Mary Church in Silver Creek, just north of Dowagiac, and that's where he is buried, and that's where there are still some of his ancestors are living in that area even today.
It's so amazing whenever we talk about local history, like the history of the Diocese of Kalamazoo and Southwest Michigan. We're talking about all of American history too. We're talking about a great human drama, and you're telling me that part of the Indian removal, much like the Cherokee, is a removal of Christian Indians westward,
yes,
to make way for white American Christians. This, mm-hmm, is some of the Catholic populations actually being moved, and these are Catholics who had hung on to the faith brought to them by Jesuits a century before, and here they still are expressing the faith. And I thought, you know, I assume Notre Dame would come in as a connection at some point.
Absolutely.
I mean, in terms of geography, how is that not going to have an effect on the history of this particular state? I should identify the show briefly. This is Dr. John Pinheiro, and you're listening to Faith and Reason. Today we're talking to the historian of the Diocese of Kalamazoo, Father Bob Cragen, and we've been talking about the first French missionaries in this part of the world, in southwest Michigan, French Jesuits, and we're kind of on up through the statehood period here, with the Catholic Church being divided into dioceses finally in within the bounds of the United States. During a time, by the way, the 1830s, that was starting to have heightened nativism and anti-Catholicism in the United States. So there's that to contend with, just as there had been to contend with the earlier French holdovers in Quebec with the Quebec Act around the time of the Revolution, which some Americans weren't too happy about because it had offered legalization and recognition of the Catholics living in Quebec, which had at that point been conquered by England. Why don't we move us into, Father Bob, why don't we move into here the 1840s, the 1850s? So the Catholic Church has reconstituted itself, not just with the local faithful, but now with clergy being sent out by Cincinnati. And you mentioned some of these folks and the founding of what's going to be the University of Notre Dame. Where do we go from there, and how do we get to the Diocese of Kalamazoo?
All right. Well, so and that's a great juncture right there. Again, the Diocese of Detroit would be established in 1833. It had been established initially by a papal bull in 1827, but because of, you know, as far as the word getting here and who's going to be the, in fact, Gabriel Richard was named the first bishop, but he was never consecrated. He never assumed that position, and then he died during the cholera epidemic of 1832. Bishop Fenwick of Cincinnati died, and so the following year, a new diocese of Detroit was reestablished, 1833, and so and then this is where. And then there, as a white population that did include Catholics started moving west, that we have the establishment of some parishes along that way too. Closer to home, though, here in southwest Michigan, you had, as I mentioned, Father Badden had purchased this property, which later became the University of Notre Dame, and so here we have the establishment. We have of the Holy Cross brothers and priests and brothers coming to the United States in 1841, coming through Chicago and then making their way to the South Bend area. and Father Soren would be the founder of the university, though the community, having its roots in France, like so many of the communities during this time, you know, that here, with the Congregation of the Holy Cross, that here was the opportunity to establish an educational program that would eventually evolve into the university. Initially, though, the Bishop of Indiana, which would have been the been centered in Vincennes, was not interested in having another college or university in his state. He already had a Catholic one closer to him. But with the persistence and the of Father Soren, that here was the establishment, and Father Soren did spend time here in Southwest Michigan, and in some of our when as parishes were being established, particularly St. Mary's and Niles, and even to this day we have Holy Cross priests assisting in our in the area. So Father Soren, you know, comes to this area. And, you know, gets the university established. The influence then, of course, that there's this relationship that is still maintained with the Native Americans. Now, one of his priests, though, was a Father Louis Barreau, and Father Barreau was worked among the Native Americans here in Southwest Michigan. Eventually, his community sent him to the Far East, and he was in India, and he nearly drowned and is getting there, and so he had promised that if I ever get back to the United States, he would establish himself there. And so eventually he did make his way. He left the religious that community and became a priest of Detroit. And served the rest of his time here in Southwest Michigan, and is buried out at Silver Creek, at the same place where Chief Pokagan is buried. And that didn't set very well with Father Soren, and but nevertheless, it was something that you know, that the connection with the Holy Cross and the establishment of the University of Notre Dame, also with the Holy Cross, were the Holy Cross Sisters, and just north of South Bend, and between Niles and South Bend is this crossroads called Bertrand. And along the St. Joseph River, and this is where the first Sisters of Holy Cross here in the United States made their vows. There's only a cemetery left. There's a foundation of the building of the church. Didn't look like a very big church, but nevertheless, there's the first vows of Holy Cross Sisters were taken in Bertrand, Michigan, around I think it was probably about 1844. And so already even the sisters and the tremendous work of the Holy Cross Sisters in education with our schools and in hospital ministries, and then now today even similar to the Sisters of St. Joseph with the you know in parish works and the missionary work that they are involved with. So here, I mean, again, it's here in Southwest Michigan, it's like there's the original foundation. In fact, there had been an invitation for Father Soren to consider putting the University of Notre Dame in what is in Minden, Michigan. It's a again a rural community here in our diocese, but one of the oldest parishes or at least the sites along the St. Joseph River here in Michigan. But the offer was not accepted, and so Father Soren stayed down in near the south bend of the St. Joseph River. That's how the city got its name.
How big was the Catholic community by that time?
Here in Southwest Michigan during the 30s and 40s, it's just a spattering of Catholics, the next parish to really be established or, you know, to have a resident pastor would be in Coldwater, Michigan. I had the privilege of serving there back in the 1993 to 99. But here it's at the south central part of Michigan, just 15 miles north of the Indiana border. And and St. Mary's Church in Marshall, again another older parish, 1852, but it's along the territorial road between about halfway between Detroit and Chicago, and so things are moving west. So there's not a lot of you have the priests going out and seeing where there are Catholics, and yet there's not a strong settlement of Catholics during this time.
So it's all really still mission field in this part of the country then.
Absolutely. Uh-huh. Yep.
I know there were certain Protestant leaders of that day who were quite concerned about the West and whether Catholics were going to sort of outnumber Protestants there. And there was somewhat of a race to settle what they would have called the West then and to settle places like Michigan. And, in some ways I can see where that fear must have been coming from. The Catholics, they're spreading out. They're building their actual footprint, right? The brick-and-mortar signs are hard to mistake, it sounds like, by the mid-1800s. And definitely expanding into places where there's not a lot of Catholics yet, but, of course, now there are. And, we have about 20 minutes left on the program. Why don't we go ahead and get into the 20th century and talk about what must have been some of the immigrant groups who really boosted the population of Catholics in these areas. I'm looking down the list of names of some of the important personages, and they kind of go from French into Irish and then a little bit of Polish thrown in.
Yes.
And I'm wondering if that's kind of, if that's pretty much the common pattern. How do we get to Kalamazoo? I mean, what's the source? How big is Kalamazoo as a city at the time? Is it large? Is it small? It doesn't become the center of its own diocese until 1971. So I'm wondering why people would be coming to this region, and particularly what's drawing those immigrants to this region.
Sure. Well, then in very broad strokes, but as far as really one of the next churches to be established would be St. Augustine's. And that would be eventually become our the see of the diocese would be our cathedral in 1971. But in 1856, here is this establishment, this outpost that Father Sorin himself would have visited. The Holy Cross were instrumental, and so here is this. Of course, this is as the railroad is moving from the Detroit area, moving west into towards Chicago. That again, this would be the natural stop, and this is where we see not only the establishment of the towns along the railroad tracks, but this would be also the establishment that these are bringing. Here's a white population that's coming in, an immigrant population, and here that is Catholic, and again the first being the Irish, and again here is the time in the 1840s, the 1850s that. Here's this wave, that first big wave of immigration from Ireland, coming to Southwest Michigan, and the Irish, that many of them being Roman Catholic, that there was that need, and so St. Augustine, is started and becomes the hub that many parishes. Most of our parishes would have eventually have had an initial contact, or that the resident priest in Kalamazoo would be sent out from there. Initially, it would have been Ann Arbor, but as things moved west, and then Kalamazoo became an important deanery. And in fact, what's called the golden age of the Catholic Church here was under Monsignor Frank O'Brien. And he was the pastor of St. Augustine's from 1881 to 1921, that's the year of his death. And he was instrumental. He was the friends of presidents and congressmen, and it was very well established. And one that at the beginning of Catholic education, he helped bring. He was part of the instrument of inviting the sisters. To start Borges Hospital in 1889, and was just such a significant and just such a tremendous figure, You know, this is Father O'Brien, then eventually Monsignor O'Brien. He was named a domestic prelate in his latter years. But
so did Catholics not? I mean, it sounds like they didn't have the kind of trouble in Michigan that they did in New York City or in Philadelphia in terms of opposition by other laborers or by anti-Catholic groups. It sounds like they come and they're pretty successful. There's not a lot of waves.
And that's right. And so here's this golden age, and yet something awful happened that turned things around during that, you know, after Monsignor's death. His successor was Father O'Neill, Father Henry O'Neill. He was a pastor. He was a priest of the Detroit Diocese, and so he was sent here and probably looked forward to his many years of service. And yet in 1923, one of the priests that was sent to him had become disgruntled and was and just found himself at odds with people in the parish and also with the pastor, that Father O'Neill was preparing to censure him. His assistant, Father Dillon, he was a Canadian priest. He wasn't a part of the diocese yet, or if he ever would be, but he was causing difficulties. And so the story on April 12th is that Father O'Neill was prepared to dismiss him. And Father Dillon came down from his room and took out a revolver and killed Father O'Neill. And this is tremendous story that it just put a shock for the whole area that a priest killing another priest. I mean, it fed fuel for that was really the first time of real anti-Catholic sentiment.
A priest killing a priest.
That's right.
Okay.
That it just was this terrible story that, you know, and so people, I've gone back and read accounts of this murder at St. Augustine's, and it was something that, and about that time too, is that there's a story about a local Catholic priest who had run off with the mayor's wife, and you know, so this murder and then this affair just caused really one of the big anti-Catholic waves, particularly in South here in Kalamazoo. Again, many of the settlers, the Irish Catholics who were here, but you know, many of the early settlers were New Yorkers. They were Dutch, and still there's a lot of the Dutch influence and the presence of those initial settlers back from that came into even the 20th century. So here was this two negative stories that happened relatively near each other. So the priest that is sent to temporarily to replace Father O'Neill, who had been killed, was a man named Father John Hackett. Now Father Hackett grew up here in Southwest Michigan. He was from Silver Creek Parish, so this oldest, it's given more vocations to the priesthood, the religious life, and even a bishop was one of the early Bishop Richter.
As a not a native Michigander, I think I'm going to have.
Right.
Sounds like I'm going to have to pay a trip.
Oh,
to,
that
Silver
was. I would love to show you this, John, because it's just something that here is this. So Father Hackett comes to Kalamazoo and has to reestablish really a Catholic presence, and so for the next 30 years, he would be the pastor of St. Augustine's. There's these stories about Father Hackett is that he would walk downtown. He would be try to make a presence there, and yet, but even to the point where he would receive ridicules and insults, and even people spitting upon him. But he maintained his presence. He didn't shy away from it, and he would serve St. Augustine's from 1923 to 1953 upon his retirement. He died in 1969. He was eventually named a Monsignor, a domestic prelate during the pontificate of Pius the 12th. From accounts, he was really not interested in titles, but that Catholic presence. And our local Catholic high school is named after Monsignor Hackett. Now, this is interesting that, of course, here, you know, coming to Kalamazoo at a height of anti-Catholic feeling and a disdain for the Catholic priesthood, in 2000, I just find this very interesting, in 2000, the Kalamazoo Gazette was recognizing different persons, different groups during the that 2000, that, you know, for us it was the Jubilee year, but, you know, with the year 2000, what did that mean for our communities? And so they were recognizing the contributions of organizations and groups, and Monsignor Hackett was named the most influential religious leader in Kalamazoo for the 20th century.
Wow.
And I thought,
that's a great honor.
That's right. And, you know, it's now something that he would probably dismiss, or he says, oh, you know, who cares about that? But, you know, his mission, what he had to face, is something that you know, is worthwhile. And I share these stories with particularly about Monsignor Hackett with our seminarians, because just to say, you know, you think you're working hard, and it's like, or some of our younger priests, and it's like, look at the life of Father Hackett, Monsignor Hackett, and there's a lot of people that still remember him. I mean, he's he's very colorful, very interesting stories, but he was one that, he stayed the course, and that's Monsignor Hackett, you know.
And he's, you know, this long line of contributors to the Catholic presence, these evangelists, first the missionaries that you've given us so far today on our show here, Faith and Reason. This long line of people is nothing but, again, a lesson of what I think we as Catholics are called to do now, right? We're not just supposed to take the faith and go into the privacy of our own home and it ends there, but we're to preserve it and pass it on in its fullness
and
build something for the next generation as well.
That's the beauty of we are a traditional church. We hand on what we have received. One quick last story about Monsignor Hackett. In the late 1940s, they finally had the plans. They were going to build a new St. Augustine Church. Now, the one that had been located on Michigan Avenue was right next to the railroad tracks, so they had no speaker system. And so when the trains went through, you know, unless maybe Monsignor had a great voice that he could speak above it, but it was probably a very difficult thing. So they finally were going to build the original St. Augustine was on Kalamazoo Avenue. They were going to build on Michigan Avenue. And so the original plans, he says, what do you think you're building, a cathedral? And he says, you never know. And in 1970, on December the 19th, the papal bull from Paul VI announced that there were two new dioceses established in Michigan, the Gaylord Diocese, and with St. Mary's as its first cathedral, and the Kalamazoo Diocese with St. Augustine as the cathedral, with Bishop Donovan, Paul Donovan, as the first bishop. And so it's just... So Monsignor died November of 1969, and... 13 months later, St. Augustine, the church that he so loved and served, and the community that he loved and served so much, was established as the Cathedral of Southwest Michigan. And so that brings us up to 1971, and the cathedral has been the site of the consecration and the installation of Bishop Donovan. And Bishop Murray, James Murray, when he was also consecrated a bishop in the cathedral church in 1997, when he became our third bishop. And since then, though, Bishop Markevich, he was already a bishop. He wasn't ordained there, but mm-hmm. and Bishop Bradley, when he came in 2009, he was already an auxiliary of Pittsburgh, and so he was installed. But
so was Bishop Murray the only one of the bishops of Kalamazoo from Michigan?
Let's see. That's correct. So Bishop Bishop Donovan was a priest of Lansing, but had been born in Iowa, but he grew up in Lansing, Michigan. Bishop Markevich was born in Brooklyn, New York, and was an auxiliary of Rockville Center, basically most of Long Island. And when he came in 1995, and then died in 97, and then Bishop Murray was born in Jackson, Michigan, and was a priest of the Lansing Diocese at the time that he was named the third bishop of Kalamazoo, and served here for 16 years. And then when Bishop Bradley, he comes to us from Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, but interesting enough, his sister was, she's deceased now, but she was in a religious community and had taught in the Detroit area. So he had his Michigan connections. He said the only thing I ever heard of about Michigan, though, was cornflakes before that. So that was so his connections was with cornflakes.
That's interesting. I think of the cornflakes, and I start thinking of the Seventh-day Adventists, and I guess that's a whole other show.
Oh, wow, it sure is.
I'm looking here. This is Dr. John Panero. I'm talking with Father Bob Cragen about the Diocese of Kalamazoo and its history, and I'm here in the Holy Family Radio studio in Grand Rapids, and I'm looking at the wall over here, and there's a poster of the Grand Rapids Seminarians and of the Kalamazoo Seminarians, and it makes me think that if we're talking about building up this history and really building for tomorrow, which takes people that really respect the past to build for tomorrow. Otherwise, we just pay attention to the present, which is a common struggle for a lot of humanity, I think, just kind of living for today, only thinking about ourselves. And as we've been talking about that, then it makes me think a bit of the future and the photographs of these young men on the wall. And I'm wondering, maybe in our last 5 minutes here, Father Bob, if you could just tell us a little bit about the diocese today and where it's going, and are there what religious communities do you have in the diocese now? Aquinas College recently, we have a new chaplain for after many years, and so there's now the presence of Dominican men in the Diocese of Grand Rapids, and that's a community we expect to grow, and we have the Franciscan Sisters of the Eucharist and others here locally, and I'm just wondering, I'd like to know more about the Kalamazoo Diocese, and I know some of our listeners would also.
Sure. Well, thank you, John. Yes. Well, you know, with the establishment of the diocese, we have there are 59 churches here. There are 45 parishes with resident pastors and 14 parishes that without resident pastors that are served by approximately 45 priests, and we do have a number of deacons, I think, who serve us, and not too many sisters in our schools, though some are in some of our pastoral centers in pastoral work. The priests of our diocese, you know, I'm one of the diocesan priests. There's not a lot of us who are natives of this area. Of our present seminarians, let's see, I'm because I have my poster here. I'm looking right at it, and probably about I think 7 or 8 of the seminarians were born here in the diocese or have lived here. You know, again, with the we have a number of religious men and women who have hailed from the diocese, and so now my local neighbor, Father Farrell, likes to remind us that, you know, he has the most seminarians. I think he has 3 seminarians from his parish. I only have 1, but but of the 3, he attributes that to certainly their perpetual adoration chapel, you know, 24/7, and it's
Saint Isidore here locally has been.
Yeah,
I hate to use the word productive, but I can't think of a better term off the top of my head. But
has
been like that,
you know,
as well.
Well, as I mentioned, Sacred Heart of Mary's Church, you know, provided a lot of priests and religious men and women in the 19th century and the early 20th century. But we've relied upon so many other places, and right now we're very blessed to have, you know, a number of priests from other nations. We have a couple of Polish priests. We have priests from India who serve in our diocese, and again, without them, you know, we would be, pretty empty-handed. We have a number of Colombian priests who have come here, and some have been ordained for us. Our recent ordinations, we had three men ordained. One was born in Vietnam, Father Ben, and then we have Father Tom McNally, who grew up here in Kalamazoo, and then Father Avelio, who is originally from Colombia. So here we had quite an international ordination.
What a great reminder of a universal church. Huh? We've been talking about a church here that started French, was Native American for a while, went a bit Irish and Polish, and now we're really expanding outward to Colombians.
That's right. So it's a true reflection. Mm-hmm. And so and with our men who are in studies, and you know, we have and we continue to promote them and ask our prayers for them, because what they have ahead of them is certainly, you know, there's a lot of hard work. Like you said, that's why I like the example of Father Hackett, Monsignor Hackett, to say, guys, you know, this is to try to aspire, you know, the hard work and you know, maybe the challenges that come along with that. The good thing is that, you know, there's good people throughout all our dioceses, and you know, and I've been fortunate to travel in many of our parishes and have helped with masses when priests have been on vacation or if there's a particular need, and having served, you know, at different parishes, and even now as a pastor, you know, there's still some weekends that I can I have to excuse myself. Sometimes my parish gets a little anxious about that, but I says, you know, we're just trying to help out. But the faith in here in Southwest Michigan continues to grow, and something that I will continue to encourage and remind people that, you know, if they haven't been to church, and it's like, what, and this is a beautiful time during the Lenten season to be renewed in one's roots and one's faith that is so rich and deep. And, you know, like you said, going back 350 years ago, I mean, you know, maybe in Europe that's not a lot of years, but you know, for here in Southwest Michigan, here in the United States, that's pretty significant, and right here in our own diocese.
Well, and as you said earlier at the start of the program, going back into the 1600s, so you know, our history is European history in that sense, isn't it?
Yeah.
This is Dr. John Pinero. I've been talking for the last hour with Father Bob Cragen about the history of the Diocese of Kalamazoo and the history of Southwestern Michigan, or as he would call it, the growth of faith in the Fruit Belt. And we've brought ourselves up to the present here. And Father Bob, I want to thank you very much for being on the show today.
Thank you so much, John. It's been my privilege.
You know, it's been a real pleasure. And to our listeners, I'd like to thank you for tuning into Holy Family Radio. And thanks again to our great producer, Michael Fiorenzo. He's a great helper on the program and arranging guests and bringing people like Father Bob Cragen to you. Please check us out on Facebook and on the World Wide Web for Faith and Reason at the Holy Family Radio webpage. We're on at 1140 a.m. in Grand Rapids and 91.5 FM in Kalamazoo. Thank you for listening.
You've been listening to Faith and Reason with your host, Dr. John Pinero, on Holy Family Radio. If you'd like to listen to this program again or share it with a friend, audio copies are available online at holyfamilyradio.net. Dr. John Pinero is Associate Professor of History and Director of Catholic Studies at Aquinas College in Grand Rapids, Michigan. Faith and Reason is brought to you by Holy Family Radio. I'm your program producer, Michael Fiorenzo. Join us next time as we connect the riches of the Catholic intellectual tradition to daily life. Thanks for listening.